so long, it's been good to know you. This dusty old dust is rolling me home. Gotta be drifting along.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Good morning. I'm Farha Khan. This is Prof Talk. Today I talk with Nobel laureate Dr. Carl Wieman. He is here at UBC leading the Carl Wieman Science Education Initiative, an innovative program to reshape science education at UBC. Carl Wieman and a team of experts are working on determining what students should learn and scientifically measuring what students are actually learning. By adapting new pedagogical approaches in classrooms, instructors are addressing the question of how do we now move the students from where they are to where they meet the goals we have set. This sounds like a daunting task, but data is already showing that even the smallest changes in pedagogical methods and technological innovations in classrooms can result in a better learning environment for students and professors alike. One example of a new innovation in science education is clickers in classrooms, remote control-like devices that allow students to anonymously answer multiple-choice questions at the click of a button. The results can be tallied and shown immediately to the class. I had the chance to talk to some former as well as current undergraduate science students about some of their experiences in learning at UBC. This is what they had to say.
I found that my experience as a UBC science student, probably quite similar to what most students find when they first enter UBC. In high school, I was very strong academically, and when I got to UBC, I found it actually quite a challenge to study and prepare for my exams and courses, because in high school, I would coast by knowing most of the course content, doing the homework and completing that, and doing very well. But coming to UBC, I found that studying was a skill I actually had to learn and become successful at to do well at UBC. Now, learning study skills was something that was never taught to me, and I think would be very useful for all students come to UBC or even in high school. Now, when I was a student at UBC, the type of classes that which I excelled in, which I did well in as a science student, were the ones that which included labs that had hands-on learning, where I could actually engage what I learned in the classroom environment in a more smaller setting with groups and peers, where we can actually discuss what we're taught and what we're actually doing. And those smaller classroom sizes were very conducive to myself doing very well. Now, as a teacher, engaging students through different activities was one trick that I found very useful in teaching science. There are many different types of learners in the classroom. There's the kinesthetic, the ones that like to just listen or write, and the visual ones as well. So engaging the class in different activities was always excellent in engaging everyone in different modalities so that they never got bored and they were always learning through different areas and in new ways. In my classrooms, I would always address the goals and what I wanted the students to learn each class so that there was a clear understanding of what I expected from them and what they had to get out of each lesson. Now, that was communicated at the beginning of every lesson on the board where I indicated what I'm looking for. Then points, for example, I'm looking for you to be able to describe photosynthesis or to be able to dissect a heart, and give them these clear outlines so at the end of the day, the student can go back and see if that was met or not. That way, they can come back and ask me more questions. I found that the more effective professors at UBC were the ones that were able to engage their students and be able to communicate them to them directly in much smaller settings.
So first year as a science student was a little bit overwhelming in the first term, especially just coming to a new environment in UBC in general. I found that my science classes were of a large number of students in one class, and just that sometimes it could be a little intimidating with the prof, especially if you wanted to ask questions. and just that I found that it wasn't very interactive as a first year, especially during my first term of courses. Just also it also had to do with us getting adapted into the university environment, different style of learning. We did use LeCooker. I found it somewhat helpful just to sometimes make myself feel that I'm on the same page as everybody else, that I'm not being totally left out, because it was a very general feeling for first-year science students to feel that, oh, they're behind, they're freaking out about whether they're not catching up or they're not on the same page as everyone else. So using a clicker definitely helped in that way. And also, I think it also did help the professor realize what they needed to focus on a little bit more when the class didn't really get a certain question that he posted. So clicker in that way helped quite a bit. And then the labs were, I found that having labs definitely was a big point, a big bonus for being in science, because that's why a lot of people signed up for science for. They wanted lab experience, they wanted hands-on experience. So I think as a first year, even though we did get that lab experience, I would have wanted a little bit more hands-on experience in lab applications as opposed to just a more lecture-style course. Second year, I'm really enjoying it now, taking more specialized courses, of course, but I still wish that there's more opportunities for hands-on experience, more interactive style of learning, which is also more innovative.
My guest today is Dr. Carl Wyman, who joined UBC in 2007. His academic background is in physics, and his research has been recognized with numerous awards, including the Nobel Prize in Physics in 2001. He has worked on a variety of research and innovations in teaching physics to a broad range of students, including the Physics Education Technology Project that creates educational online interactive simulations and studies their effectiveness. He also does research on student beliefs about physics and on problem-solving skills. Dr. Wyman, welcome to Prof Talk.
Oh, thank you.
Now, you come from humble beginnings. Your childhood was spent in the forests of coastal Oregon, where in your primary years you attended a small rural school. In what ways did your childhood surroundings influence your love of science and mathematics?
It's hard to know exactly, but I do know, we live way out where you couldn't run down to the store for something you needed, so learned very early on to build things myself, design things, improvise, and I think a lot of that's carried over into my research. I do experimental physics, and anybody who sees my experiments sees that I do a lot of improvising, coming up with new ways to use equipment and so on.
Mm-hmm. Now, it also occurred to me in reading your autobiography online that you would consider that your education in science was not necessarily the kind of formal education that we would expect from a Nobel laureate, that through high school and later in university, you described yourself as receiving a kind of unorthodox education. From your freshman year to the end of your undergraduate studies, you became deeply engrossed in lab research and physics discussions. Can you describe some of those memories?
Sure. But first, I want to say that if you actually look in detail at a lot of Nobel Prize winners, you'll see that a lot of them had a pretty unorthodox education. I mean, there are a few who've followed the straight and narrow path, but I think you'll find more of them have not sort of been doing what they were supposed to in school, and they were more like me, sort of charting their own path. And I think that has a lot of lessons there for education. We can maybe get to later, but in my case, even as a high school student, they didn't have the physics course I wanted to take, and so I was kind of off on my own, struggling to some extent, but kind of trying to learn on my own. And then and then I went away to the university. I didn't do terribly well in physics courses, but I did have a chance to start working in a research lab, and I spent all of my time really working in a research lab and avoided taking almost all the normal physics courses you're supposed to have to actually learn physics. I seem to have done all right without them.
And so do you feel that type of experience was really influential in your graduate studies?
I think so, yeah, because, I mean, what I know now in looking back, because I've done a lot of work on studying how people learn and reading research on how people learn, I mean, what I know in retrospect, I can see what happened to me was I became a much more expert perspective on approaching my learning at an early age because I was sort of outside the formal system, and that carried over really throughout my career. And I think a lot of most students, when they've kind of following the usual education path, they have to get into their graduate research before they can sort of get into thinking about learning like an expert in the subject does.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that your experiences has really been a motivating factor in the current work that you're doing? Which I guess leads me to the next question, is to talk about the Carl Wieman Science Education Initiative here at UBC. Can you describe some of its objectives and learning outcomes?
I can, but first I want to address your previous comment.
Okay.
I don't actually see my own experience as a motivation.
Okay.
Because one of the things that I'm very convinced about is that we have to approach education not by thinking what happened to ourselves or, you know, trying to imagine all the students are like us as a teacher, but rather look really carefully at what is most effective and what's working for those students in our classrooms. And
right.
So, you know, I can see in retrospect, looking back at my own education, how what we know about learning is consistent with why I was successful. But I want to emphasize that I don't think, you know, you can take my example or anybody's example as how you should determine how everybody should learn that. So, okay, so that was a long-winded explanation before your question.
Yeah.
Your question is looking at the goals and purposes of the Science Education Initiative?
That's right.
Yeah, so I did sort of lead it to that. I mean, the goals really are to improve science education, and I mean, a lot of what we're trying to do would improve education of all kinds, but I'm focusing on science because we have the best examples and we have the best data of what works well. And so what we're really doing is taking a lot of the research that's been done over the past 10 to 20 years on how people learn, better understanding of what makes up learning to think like a scientist and, you know, be an expert in a subject, how better to measure how that's being achieved, and then systematically put in place, have all the teachers put in place these kind of tested best methods of teaching. And sometimes we don't know what works exactly right in a certain, you know, a certain course with certain students, so you have to take the principles that you've learned from other research, try experiments, and see if the students learn well, and if they don't, you carefully analyze why they didn't learn so well and then how to continuously improve it. And so this process of carefully measuring how successful students are and then using that to guide how to continually improve things to really reach these goals of effective education are sort of the bottom line of what we're all about.
Now, what kind of pedagogical reform are departments within the science faculty currently undertaking?
I mean, they're doing a lot of different, the details vary, but the general ideas are similar. I mean, one of the key things that we know about learning is that it's not just taking in information. You know, that works fine if you are trying to learn whether you want to wear, you know, this shirt or that shirt in the morning, and somebody says, "Oh, that one's better," and so you got that. But you know, that's not what science is learning about. It's really developing your brain, and so that really requires not just sitting there listening to something, but actually very intensely processing it and working on solving problems, and then getting effective feedback that guides your thinking. And so you know, if you're thinking about it one way and that's correct, that gets confirmed and reinforced. If you're thinking about it wrong, that gets you get guidance to be in the right direction, and you get guidance at the time when it helps, not, you know, 3 weeks later when you find out you did lousy on that exam and you've long ago forgotten what it was even about. So this basic ideas of getting students deeply engaged, thinking about the subject and sort of authentic tasks and getting feedback are what's happening in the many different science departments. And you can find all sorts of different ways people are finding to implement that, depending on their own particular subject and the course and the class size and so on.
Now, which departments specifically are involved?
So we have a number of departments involved at different levels. We have our poster child department is Earth and Ocean Sciences. They started at the very beginning, and they've been by far the most successful, with many of their faculty now, must be close to half, working on implementing new ways to teach that accomplish all these purposes that I talked about. They're implementing better ways of assessing how their students are learning. They're thinking very carefully about the goals of what they really want students to be able to do at the completion of each course, and making sure their courses build in a sensible way. So they're kind of leading the way. Then other departments that are involved but haven't gotten quite so far along, we have physics and computer science, and then we have smaller projects going on in statistics, math, chemistry, and I'm leaving someone out here. Did I say life sciences? Anyway, just about everybody else.
Yeah,
but they're,
yeah.
They're, it's really at this point, we just have the three departments that are working on really widespread change.
Now, today, what kind of success stories have you heard specifically from UBC students who are benefiting from improvement to science education?
To be honest, I'm a little removed from the students, so I collected a lot of data early on and got a lot of stories about things that need to be fixed. So I heard those. I ran a bunch of focus groups early when I was here. But I haven't, I'm afraid that I haven't followed up now to get the stories directly. But what I do, you know, what we are doing is we're collecting a lot of data, people working with us in these departments on both the student learning and the student experience and their sort of attitudes about the subject and material and so on. And we're seeing that in a lot of ways, like I say, Earth and Ocean Sciences, we have the best data showing that students are a lot happier in some of the courses, and I think we have pretty clear indications that they're learning a lot more in them as well.
There's a common concern among many first-year students at the university, specifically in science, seeing that they come to UBC with some of the highest GPAs in the country. However, when they begin their first year, their experience tends to be quite challenging academically. A lot of students find that their first-year GPAs seem to plummet quite dramatically. And so what kinds of measures is your initiative working on specifically to improve the first-year science experience?
I wish we were doing more than we are. I mean, I've sort of done some data collecting on that, and I have to say that there's a lot, the UBC first year experience in science leaves a lot to be desired. I think that the courses could be improved quite a bit, and they could be improved in both how they present things, how they support students in learning the material, and the kind of feedback and guidance they give to the students. And you know, I'll be frank, it's not nearly the progress yet that I'd like to see and that I think needs to be done. We have made some, you know, we have made some improvements. I know there's a big, going back to Earth Notion Sciences, big Earth Notion Sciences course they run that has gotten the students kind of a lot more involved, and they're having to read ahead. They're having much more kind of questions and discussion in class. One of the large physics courses has been changed quite a lot to try and make the subject with a lot more real world connections, and then changing the tutorials so that the students are not just sitting there listening, but actually working together, working through more realistic problems, and then they can get, that helps them get more useful guidance and feedback. So those are two examples, but to be honest, there's a long ways to go.
Now, just going back from what you said to my original question about your experiences, having a much more of a participatory type of education in physics, can you not help but sort of envisioning that type of goal at UBC? I mean, not just in Earth and Ocean Sciences, but also, say, in physics or biological sciences and other departments?
Yeah, I mean, that's where we're hopefully moving towards. You know, I've sort of accidentally lucked into a particular situation working in a research lab, but it's not actually the lab that was the difference. That was just an environment in which I was faced every day with kind of real, sensible problems that I was trying to figure out, and that's exactly the experience we need to make sure that students have in all their courses, is they're facing, you know, interesting, realistic problems that get them struggling intellectually the same way you do in a research lab. And, yeah, I mean, I think it's that kind of, it needs to be that kind of thinking about participating in the discipline in a, you know, in an intellectual way rather than having somebody stand up there and talk to you about it.
And would you say that with that type of change in undergraduate education, that could potentially help a student better and to prepare for graduate work?
Yes. I mean, it prepares them better for everything. It prepares them first. I mean, they get a much deeper, more useful knowledge of the subject. We talk about learning to transfer, which means you can take this piece of information you've learned and you can apply it in new situations. And oftentimes that's what we think about as creativity. But so they develop much more that kind of learning. They develop a much more expert-like approach to learning, where they come to reflect on the learning, on their learning as an, in kind of an active way, and think about it and think how to optimize their learning. And these are things that aren't natural. You know, you're not born with these. These are skills you have to develop. And if you have the educational experience to develop them, it means that when you're done, you simply are, you know, intellectually much more capable. And whether it's going to go off to graduate work or whether it's going out to have a job that uses those kind of skills, it's, you know, they always come in useful, especially this ability to learn new things effectively.
Now I'd like to ask you about the final sort of outcomes of this initiative, because it's only a 5-year initiative, is that correct?
Yeah.
And then what happens after that?
Well, the idea is that we work on going through and applying these principles to really redesign and test courses. But then they're also preserved and passed along. And so in the process, you can make the teaching not just more effective, but more efficient, that faculty members don't have to spend a lot of time reinventing everything each term. And so the concept is that, and, you know, this is what's being put into place, is that you develop effective techniques and you develop the structures to make sure they get passed along. And so the faculty members will be A, teaching much more effectively, so students are learning better. B, it'll take the faculty less time. And C, it's a lot more fun because you've got the students much more engaged and interested in the subject, and, you know, they're asking you lots more questions, they're involved. You know, everybody's a teacher wants to have their students do that. So by building in these things all together, the model is that we'll be able, after 5 years, all these courses will be changed, the faculty will be thinking about teaching in a different way, and so it'll just sustain itself beyond them without needing any additional resources.
Now, what's going to be the next chapter of your life after your...
After I finish this?
At UBC, yeah.
I don't know. It's way too much work to be done here. and there's still a few years to go before worrying about that. So.
Well, thank you, Dr. Wyman, for your time today. And
okay, thank you.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. You are tuned in to Prof Talk on UBC CITR 101.9 FM and via live streaming audio on citr.ca. Today, a UBC panel discussion on the study of religion is taking place with several distinguished professors from various departments on campus. They will examine the state of the study of religion from different disciplinary perspectives in the humanities and the sciences. This event will take place tonight in the Coach House at Green College between 5 and 6:30 p.m. It is open to the university community and general public without charge. Next week, I talk to Professor Emeritus and renowned pianist Robert Silverman from the UBC School of Music. He will play a live performance on the show, and that show will begin early Monday morning on April 6, beginning at 7 a.m. So stay tuned for a one-hour episode of Prof Talk next week. If you would like to send feedback of this show, you can email us at proftalk@gmail.com or visit our blog for a future schedule of shows at ubcproftalk.blogspot.com. And you can also hear the podcast of this show anytime on citr.ca. I am Farah Khan. Thank you for tuning in this morning. Talk to you next week.